You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Yo Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We're going to have a bit of a mashup here in a moment. Confirm or deny meets one or the other.
I just like confirm or deny. Why would you want to screw around with
because
that?
Because we're jamming up our boy Kinger, who's trying to get this thing done up on TV.
I like.
Kinger knows how to react.
He's reacting on the fly here, but.
One or another. I like it.
It's basically the same thing. I'll phrase it.
One or the other.
Or the other. It's very cut and dry.
Yeah.
Would you one like? Or the other.
Maybe there's something in the middle.
Fired up. Confirm or deny. No,
we'll get to it in a moment. We got a lot cooking here. We'll play the confirm or deny intro, and we'll drop some JFJ sound bites.
So basically what you're doing is you're going out to the mound right now, and you're giving the guy in the bullpen, which is Kinger, ample amount of time.
He just got up.
Yeah,
the phone wasn't working. He just got up, and he's warming up, and I need to kill time as much as
Kinger
possible.
Kinger is in the back,
tossing
the ball around.
You're having a conversation with the back catcher.
See the history was made last night in Major League Baseball?
That amount of home runs in
the
a season.
The most home runs in a season, and perfect that it was a Baltimore Oriole that hit the home run. But that is number 6,106. That passes the record from 2017, and there's still 3 weeks left in the season.
Let me ask you something. How do they deal with the baseball? Is that somebody way up above saying, like, is he literally flying to the plant saying, juice these baseballs?
Rob Manfred, you're saying, the commissioner? Like,
yes,
he had to be involved. This
how does that happen? I want to know how the transaction happens.
I don't know.
We're not seeing enough home runs, too many strikeouts. Guys aren't hitting the ball anywhere. There's the shift. We want to see this baseball going out of the stadium. How, like, it'd be a fascinating documentary. How, like, behind the scenes, what is he doing? Is he driving to the plant saying, make these things fly out of the ballpark?
Well, all you hear is the balls are juiced.
Right.
But no one knows what
every
that means.
Every pitcher is saying that.
Yeah, everyone's conceded that something's different. They are manufacturing the baseballs differently than they did in the past, but no one knows what it means.
I used to take the leather skin off, and it was just a bunch of rubber bands.
Right. But maybe they're winding them up tighter. Maybe there's
ask
more
Justin
or less.
Verlander what he thinks of the baseballs right now.
Right.
He has gone on tirades this year saying this is a joke.
But that's a guy, he's got what, like a mid-2 ERA? He threw a no-hitter. He shouldn't really be complaining. I think the right. baseballs are working for him.
Well, isn't it more? It's more valuable when he is complaining.
Oh, it means more right. when he's complaining. Absolutely.
Yeah. If he had,
if TJ Zoik is complaining, they're like, sorry, I don't know who you are. But if Verlander's leading the charge, it's going to make a lot more noise. There's no debating that. But I do think it's been an astonishing turn of events when you consider what's happened in the baseball world, where fans are hating on the home run. Like, can you put that into perspective? The home run has been the it moment in the history of baseball. Babe Ruth became an icon because he hit home runs.
Calling a shot, doing all of that.
They saved baseball in 98, regardless of what was going on with the juicing. McGuire and Sosa saved baseball, not because they were hitting doubles, not because their OPS was hitting record numbers, because they were hitting home runs.
Well, let me ask you
people
this.
Have turned on the home run. I can't believe it.
If it's too much and just annoying, I go back to, I grew up technically in the 80s, when hockey games, there were games that were 10-8, where the goaltenders didn't go down. A slap shot from the blue line on the ice could go in.
I'll never forget, my dad gave away Leaf tickets to friends, and the Maple Leafs beat the Edmonton Oilers 10-9.
Well,
in the 80s, and it was like we couldn't. Gretzky, everybody.
But hear me out. Would there ever be a point where you, it's like it's a terrible game. It's 10-9. Like, there's no defense. It's bad goaltending. It's bad. Like, is that what they're doing in baseball? It's just too much. Like,
no.
Every time you go up, like,
because this is my gripe with the home run has been devalued because it's at the expense of a live ball play. No one's trying to hit There's no more hit and runs. There's no more stolen bases.
It's swing for the fences.
It's swing for the fence. Yeah. It's, you know, launch angles and exit velocity.
But that's analytics,
right? It's all analytical, and that's not going to change. Because as much as I might prefer to see more plays at the plate, more guys moving around the infield.
More hit and runs.
More hit and runs, all that kind of stuff. It's not going to happen because I get it. It's stupid baseball based on the numbers.
Right.
Like, baseball's so scientific, you can look at all the data and say, I don't think I should be doing that. So they don't do it. And that's why the home run is taking so much heat, because it's at the expense of guys hitting, you know, more singles and more triples, more guys on base, more balls in play, which lead to, you know, fiascos in the outfield and trying to hit a cutoff man
and
plays at the plate. Exactly. So I think the home run has become a victim of the other changes around baseball. But it really, I don't think we put this into perspective enough. Like, a home run was always what you wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to see a home run. And
I've
this
always
narrative,
thought the home run is one of the hardest things to ever do in sports.
Yeah, like, but now the narrative has changed where, like, the home run is under attack.
Yeah, that
like,
is.
Where are we in baseball where people are like, oh, there's too many home runs. I don't want to see this many home runs. It's an astonishing turn. And I don't think it's going to change unless, you know, they mess around with the mound or they mess around with the way the balls are manufactured. And I don't get the impression like that's going to happen anytime soon.
No.
Speaking of juicing, did you see this horse racing story, Justify, the horse that won the Triple Crown back in 17?
Yeah.
Turns out he got clipped for doping weeks before the Kentucky Derby, before the Triple Crown began down in Kentucky.
Dude, I was down at Saratoga Springs, and I looked at some of the muscles on that horses or on those horses, and I was like, there's just no way.
Well, I guess it was 2018. But yeah, like, a horse is juicing, but this is going to be a massive controversy because there's only 13 Triple Crown winners all time. He was one of them. He got caught juicing in California, and the board got together. I guess it took them more than a month to get the results back. And then instead of penalizing him, which should have immediately disqualified him from the Triple Crown, they changed the rules so that that drug isn't as big of an infraction. Basically saving Justify and saving Bob Baffert, the trainer. Remember Bob Baffert? Yeah. He looks like Will Ferrell and he's pounding down.
The old white-haired guy?
Yeah, he's Will Ferrell and he's pounding down.
Yeah.
But they charged, I believe, $60 million. They sold that horse off for $60 million. And I got to believe that's going to be a lawsuit. Because if you bought that horse, you're like, I bought it. He's a doping horse.
Yeah. And it, like...
Too much dong.
The crazy thing about that is we're acting like the horse snuck behind the stable and was like shooting himself.
Right. I'm kidding. I don't think
it was the trainer or the owner that did that to that animal. Mm-hmm. Like, they knew exactly what they were doing. They didn't, like, this wasn't a rogue horse that was shooting up at night.
No. This isn't Nikki Six,
like
Keith Richards of horses.
Yeah. It is ridiculous.
And they're all massive horses, like you said. You see these things up close.
Yeah.
And now I guess we'll see. I mean, the old asterisk conversation applies to the Triple Crown.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, the guy that bought the horse, he's going to stud the horse, and the guy's going to be just Chris Farley out there running around.
Would you be on board for anything goes in sports?
Yes, I would.
Oh, God, if I ever.
Yes, I would.
But, like, that's...
Because it doesn't affect me personally. Like, I know that's a very cynical view.
It is.
But it's your life.
It's the fans. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's the comedian, like, Tosh O has this thing. Like, what do I care if the guys are juiced? Like, what? Like, I want to see, you know, balls that are hit out of the stadium. Like, if football player run through 10 people if he's that juiced. Like, it's a selfish thing as a fan.
It's always been my stance. Now, I do think humans and animals have to be separated because animals cannot make that decision for themselves.
Well, that's why I was just bringing back with the...
So that is maybe a little bit different.
Right.
But, yes, I mean...
What do you care?
I prefer Mark McGwire was doing that on the clean? I suppose so, but I still got to witness him hit
70
home runs. And it's his life. It's his body. It's not mine.
Right.
He made that decision. He's a grown man.
But that's, like, it always fascinated me because... You know, I get that there are some, like, illegal, like, this guy was taking testosterone or whatever. I don't even know the drugs. But then you go to the Olympics and guys aren't allowed to take like a Sudafed because they've got a cold, a runny nose. Oh, that's on the list. And you've played with guys that went to the Olympics that whole year. They'd be like deathly sick, but couldn't look at a...
Can't take a Sudafed.
Yeah, can't take anything. You know,
nothing.
Cough medicine, because there's in there is one banned substance. Like, you have to have it within reason. But I feel like, and I'm sure this is a health thing, you're protecting those athletes from themselves, which, you know, guys will go overboard. But I played, I know for a fact, I played with guys who were on the sauce. Steroids weren't illegal in the NHL.
Right.
So
ideally, it's an even playing field, but guys are cutting corners everywhere. Like, the horse game is probably the shadiest sport.
Yeah.
When you think about it, boxing can be shady. Guys can take a
fall. The high line. Have you ever been to the high lie? Even know what that is with the scoop? It's like a giant game of like.
But isn't that like lethal? Like, if you take one of those in the head,
it could kill you.
Yeah.
Like, but those guys, it's a. I believe, because I would go several times in Florida. My understanding is it's one of the most fixed games in like history.
Yeah.
Because you'll bet on like the guy in the red jersey, red number 4. And then he comes out, and he's a long, lean guy, and all of a sudden, red number 4 is like this short, fat guy. You're like, well, hold on, what happened here?
They flipped uniforms or whatever.
And then the guy will go to catch it, and he drops it at the last second, and people will lose their minds.
Definitely,
in the
fix would be in.
You would enjoy that sport.
Well, I would until I start losing money. Then I'd be losing my mind. But they do that with the horses. They do it at the dog tracks. The dog tracks are notoriously shady, and these dogs are really treated poorly.
Well, that's what do you think they're doing to those dogs?
Well, they feed the dog. Like, if there's a dog that's a heavy favorite and a lot of money's coming in, they'll feed the dog right before he goes out. He's got no shot of winning. And they starve one dog, and that dog is chasing that rabbit like it's his life is on the line. And they're like, this is the dog we're going to fix to win the race.
That's crazy.
It's so shady. Yet there's just a million degenerates down there who are like, I need in on this.
Yeah.
It is.
I played with a ton of guys golf down in Florida, and it's like, what's up after? Heading to the dog track.
The track.
Yeah. Dog track.
The dog track is...
That's a different world.
It is so seedy, and I've been there a couple times.
Well, how did you
I
just
don't feel clean
magically roll in there?
Like, it's down in Florida. They're all over the state.
Just check it out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's one south of Fort Myers.
We'll have to ask Hugh
times.
When he's on the show.
He's there right now. They had physicals this morning in Florida. Q's at the dog track right now.
No, he's at the horses. He's at the ponies. He's not at a dog track.
All right, you guys want some confirm or deny / one or the other?
Yes.
Hit it.
I can neither confirm or deny that this is in fact a segment.
Austin trades Andrew Raycroft to Toronto in exchange for the rights to Tuukka Rask.
It's been my honor and a privilege to serve as the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs Hockey Club.
It's time for confirm or deny.
Do you regret giving all those gentlemen the no trades or no movement clauses?
I can neither confirm or deny that.
I can't confirm or deny.
I can't even confirm or deny if we're actually playing confirm or deny here. We might be playing one or the other.
It's one or the other.
Yeah, we're jamming up Kinger on the TV side here. That's really, really badly. So day one of camp, technically, with physicals. And Mike Babcock is in the spotlight. We caught up with Bruce Arthur about an hour ago. Bruce is going to write about Babcock, what he's been saying the past couple of days, his relationship with different members of the organization. So one or the other.
Right.
The most important relationship for Mike Babcock is Brendan Shanahan or Kyle Dubas. Who does he have to be on the right page with more, Shanahan or Dubas?
Shanny, for me. Because Shanny is Kyle's boss. So ultimately, even if Kyle wanted to do something, that's got to go through Brendan Shanahan.
I'm going to step ahead of the curve here and say Larry Tannenbaum.
Ooh. But that's not confirm or deny. That's more one or the
I'm
other.
Just saying,
or the
I
other.
Think from what I've heard that he's kind of... He knows the dynamics, and he's boys with Larry.
He's played his cards right, you know, showing up at BMO, and he's going to TFC games and Argo games and Raptors games. But I will say Brendan Shanahan as well. Yeah. Dubas clearly has an important role in this, and I think Shanahan would accept what Dubas had to say and put a lot of thought into it, but I'm not convinced he would hammer it home. Like, if Dubas wanted him fired, let's say this summer, and I don't know if that was ever on the table or not, but clearly it didn't happen.
Right.
Shanahan's running the operation. I mean, make no mistake. And I think Babcock is well aware of that. Yeah. Like, he's asked always about his relationship with Dubas, and he came out today and said, we don't always agree. I'd like someone to say, what about Shanahan?
Right.
What's your relationship like with the actual president of the club, the guy who truly is going to make the decision?
Yeah, the guy who brought you here and gave you that money.
Right. Wasn't Dubas who was working on that cash and working on that contract and, right. and courting him. It was Shanahan at the time.
Yeah.
One or the other. More important relationship for Babcock, his relationship with Austin Matthews or Freddie Anderson?
I'd
Austin
say-
Matthews. You know the goalie's going to say Freddie Anderson.
Well,
but I think the goalie, the only reason I'm saying, Jake, I think the goalie's schedule is kind of like, it's a conversation. What do you want to play? He'll say 55. Okay.
You're right. The only reason, I would say Austin Matthews every day of the week because of the history of, you know, Game 7 and all of that. Why I'm going to say Freddie Anderson is Babs is a guy who's hard on his goalies. And if Freddie has a slow start or a patch where...
I know, but Freddie's got enough clout where he could say, give me 55 and I'm going to give you 50 really good games.
But it's not even starting. It's not even the games played. It's more, if the goalie doesn't play well and they lose some games and Babcock starts to feel the heat, it's like, well, that guy's not stopping enough pucks. Like we saw, like he didn't... Mike Babcock, fairly or unfairly, he did not like Jonathan Bernier's game. You could tell that, right?
Like yeah.
You could tell.
He had him sent to the minors.
And there was no sugarcoating it. And, you know,
but Freddie's his guy. Like, Freddie has to be his guy.
And Freddie's a top 10 goaltender in the National Hockey League. But what I'm saying is, if he struggles, I would like to see how they would handle it, especially at key times.
I don't think Babcock's relationship with Freddie matters that much because Anderson ultimately can keep him employed here in Toronto. He's got the most powerful position. If he stands on his head,
right,
and specifically in a Game 7, which he better start doing because it hasn't happened the past couple of years,
correct,
he can personally push Mike Babcock's employment down the road.
But can he also destroy it, too?
Well, if he plays poorly.
But that's
but
what
that's
I'm saying.
His play. That's not as much the relationship necessarily.
Okay.
I think from a relationship perspective, I would say Matthews because I think Matthews is the most powerful player in the organization.
And he's going to be captain.
And I think he'll likely be the captain.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're both very important. Anderson can do more for Babcock based on playing really well.
Right.
Matthews can help him, too, if he leads the charge and puts up 50 and
right.
but performs the face in the playoffs.
Of the
but the goaltender...
Yeah. You sold me. I was more leaning towards if Freddie stunk and Babs turned on him, I would be concerned about that relationship.
Well, I think Freddie's sticking around.
Right.
Clearly. Like, that's another battle. We talk about that all the time. Who would win this battle? The player, the coach?
Right.
There's only a few players on the team that I think would win the battle over Babcock. Not that it's going to happen. Matthews would be one of them. Tavares would be one of them. I think Riley would be one of them. And Anderson would be one of them. Yeah. They need Frederick Anderson. They don't have any other option. Like, no. Whether it's Neuwirth, whether it's Hutchinson,
yeah.
The kids that they have, Wall
Scott
and Scott,
Wall,
they're years away.
Yeah, they're
but they're
every
years
team is
away.
Like that. Their number one guy, if they decide to have an off year, they're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time. Which story will get more play throughout camp the next 2 weeks? The pressure that is on William Nylander to have a bounce-back season or what we just talked about, the Freddie Anderson load management conversation?
I got to think William Nylander.
Yeah.
Just because Freddie Anderson has proven that he could have some rough patches, but he gets the job done. Like, he's established himself as a top-five goaltender in the league, and he does his thing. He's going to have some dips. Might be a slow start. Might be a bad November. It might be a bad 10 games. But his body of work always identifies with a top five guy in the league.
Yeah, I think it's Willie Nye. Just bounce back year, a lot of money, all of that. And with the focus on contracts anyways because of Mitch,
it's
more of that. And plus...
He should almost be happy about this Mitch Marner stuff.
Well, you're right.
Because it's like a focus off of him, and he can just go play hockey.
Plus, I think it's not even Freddie. It's going to, who's going to back him up, because the backup's going to have to absorb those minutes. So if it's Neuwirth, you go, okay, we need 22 to 25 games from you. However they're chopped up, no problem. That does take some of the duress off of Anderson. So I think it's Willie Nye.
Yeah, the load management conversation we've had for 3 years running now with Freddie Anderson, and it's not going to be determined in camp.
No.
We're going to have to wait to see how it plays out. Babcock was somewhat defiant today that they got to concern themselves with the playoffs, and he's going to play when he's got to play, and I think that's the right attitude in a difficult division. Publicly, anyway.
Correct.
Doesn't mean that he's going to play 65 games, and he shouldn't, right. And I don't think he will. But William Nylander has not been in this spot. He has not been in a spot where the pressure has been on him. He was a glorified eighth overall pick. He was one of the great Marlies of all time, putting up great numbers. And Babcock clarified today, if Marner's not going to be here, Kapanen's playing with Tavares, which means Nylander's playing with the big guy.
Yeah.
It's going to be Nylander and Matthews again. We rarely saw it last year. When we did, clearly it was not good enough because Nylander didn't pull his weight.
Right.
I'm expecting him to have a very good year. I don't think he's an 85, 90-point guy, but I think he can have 65 to 70 points and be solid.
He could have something with a 7 in it if he has a great year.
Yeah.
I believe.
And it's on him.
Yeah.
So I think that's likely going to play out a little bit more throughout camp. Final one, confirm or deny, one or the other. Which story will get more play through the two-week training camp? Rasmus Sandin potentially making the team, or what the top two D pairings are going to look like?
I'm going to make this statement just on one summer skate and what I think I understand as a guy that has the hockey smarts and the savvy. I think Sandin is going to push for a spot. He's a pretty smooth cat out there. He's smart, passes the puck. Edges are very good, moves very well. Made a couple plays where I was like, that's NHL stuff. That's not Sault Ste. Marie. That's not American Hockey League. I'm going to say he's going to raise some eyebrows.
I'm saying Sandin, too, because I still believe that those pairings will be a work in progress. So we'll talk about them, but you can't tell me if Tyson Barrie has an off night with Morgan Riley in the preseason. You're like, well, that's it. Never can play together. I just, you know, we will focus on it. How's Cody Ceci going to settle in and all that? But who's going to make the team on the bottom pairing?
Right. The flashy rookie always gets more play.
Right.
If he has a big opening night in the exhibition, he's on the front page of all the papers. Every radio show's talking about him.
Remember, was it Callie Rosen a couple years? Was it who was it?
Yeah, Rosen had a great camp a couple years ago. There's been multiple guys out of training camp.
Like, there was
Brandon Kozin, remember him?
Yeah.
Kozin, now that was like 3 or 4 years ago, but he
Borgman,
had a great camp.
Even a couple years ago, was like dynamite in camp.
Yeah. Sandin, he spent a year in the minors. This is not rushing him straight out of the draft into the real deal. Dermott's not playing the first 12 to 14 games.
Yeah.
I think Sandin is the real deal. I've seen him like you've seen him. He looks really good. I don't think he's going to lose his composure at the NHL level in camp.
Right.
I think he's got a real good chance to make the team, and then you start the clock on whether or not he's going to be sent back.
Right.
Even with Dermott returning, which will happen, and when Dermott returns, he's going to play.
Yeah. And Liljegren went from a great feel-good story to a guy that dropped to, I think, 17th overall, or was it 27th overall?
17th.
Yeah.
To wondering what he's all about. Like, when are you going to start sniffing around?
I think it's a make or break year for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like at some point, if you can't beat out Ben Harper or Justin Hall, you got drafted a couple of years
ago. Kevin Gravel.
Yeah.
Like all of those guys.
20, 21 years old. You've been in the minors for 2 years.
Yeah. Gotta
dig. Let's see what you got. Yeah. You know, if you're ready to play, you should have a great camp and you should step right in.
Agreed.
There you have it. One or the other, AKA.
Confirm or deny.
Very good game.
Ryan Harris will join us, former NFLer, Super Bowl champ with the Broncos, and a one-year teammate of Antonio Brown. What was it like being in the huddle with Antonio Brown? And Roethlisberger, does he think Big Ben is even remotely in shape going into a big Sunday game against Seattle this week down in Pittsburgh? So we'll get into some NFL news and notes, including what's up with Sam Darnold, what's up with Le'Veon Bell. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Thursday night or tonight, Carolina, Tampa. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio and watch it on TSN. I mean, they had all offseason to come up with a schedule. Carolina, Tampa, the first real Thursday nighter of the year. It's a divisional game. There's intrigue with the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Like, I do believe that Cam Newton, his toughness is undervalued. Like, he has taken a beating throughout his career. Now, he puts himself in that position. He runs the ball a lot. He goes right up the middle of, you know, the trenches a lot. They've taken liberties on him for a long time. Refs allow defensive players to get away with some really bad hits on him. He's tough as nails. But,
and he's a big man, too.
He is massive. He's probably 6'5", 260.
Yeah, and can move.
Can move.
Yeah.
And Jameis Winston is a massive dude as well. And there's a lot of pressure on him this year to finally prove that he was, you know, worthy of that first overall pick.
Right.
And Tampa got smoked at home against the Niners. There's pressure on both teams tonight, but I feel pretty good about Carolina. You were saying you'd hammer Carolina. I just saw online someone put $100,000 down at some book down in Vegas on the Panthers covering the 7-point spread tonight.
Wow.
7-point spread for a divisional game, $100,000. That's a lot of pesos.
That's what they always say, don't bet those divisional.
I try to avoid them.
That is a lot.
What are you going to do? All right. Antonio Brown continues to practice. It sounds like he's going to be active on Sunday. Now, I don't know if he's actually going to play or not, and a lot can change with him, clearly, between now and Sunday. But it sounds as if he's going to be down there in Miami. That's his hometown. If he gets out there for a snap, technically it would be his debut with the New England Patriots. And to chat about Brown, to chat about the NFL, we're joined now by longtime NFLer, former teammate of Antonio Brown's in Pittsburgh, and Super Bowl champ with Denver. Here is Ryan Harris. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. I'm sure you're getting asked all the time, what was it like playing with Antonio Brown? Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, well, even before these last episodes, I was being asked that by some of the greats in this game, Peyton Manning and DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, because everyone in the NFL is just amazed by his talent. And I've worked with a lot of hardworking guys in the NFL. And the year we won the Super Bowl, we all, you know, we were all taking it to the next level. But I've never seen anyone, when at practice, who works as hard as Antonio Brown. 100 balls before practice, and not just catching the balls out of the jugs machine, but catching them over the shoulder, one-handed, while he's running, and really competes in practice, which is something rare to see in the NFL. So no question, one of the hardest-working players when he's on the field.
How awkward do you think it is for his current teammates in New England, where he shows up and then these accusations come out hours after he lands? I mean, is it one of those situations where everybody in the locker room is saying, I really don't even know what to say to this guy? How do you communicate? You just want this to blow over or work itself out? It must be an awfully uncomfortable situation in that locker room.
Well, you make a decision pretty quick in the NFL that you're going to accept the player, accept the person when you see them. You know, they've also got another player, Patrick Chung, who's dealing with cocaine charges in New Hampshire. You know, it's not something you talk about over eggs, right? Like, hey, how's your cocaine charge going? You know, so
you really
learn quick in the NFL that, you know, what a guy, however many girlfriends a guy has in the hotel the night before, that's his deal. Whatever, you know, coach has, you know, XYZ going on, that's their deal. But when we work, you better get that third down blitz picked up, and you better catch the football on 3rd and 7. And especially with Antonio Brown, I mean, when it's game time, there's nobody I've played with, even on the team we won the Super Bowl with, that can change a game like Antonio Brown.
Well, do you expect this gong show that he's been at the center of for over a month, if he plays on Sunday, to affect his production?
No, absolutely not. I mean, lots of players have a lot of things going on, much of which you don't see. You know, at one time during training camp, I had 13 people of family and friends who wanted to stay at the house on a given weekend. And my wife was like, you know, this isn't normal, right? These people can get hotel rooms. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know what I mean? So you got all kinds of stuff going on. But also, you got to remember, the Patriots do the best job in the NFL of keeping things quiet. You couldn't go a day without seeing a post from Antonio Brown on social media. Since he's been with the Patriots, I don't think, to my recollection, unless it's changed in the last hour, he hasn't posted at all. I mean, they do it old school. They'll take a couple people of their security team, and they're going to be on his hip everywhere he goes. And I mean everywhere. And they will grab him and throw him in the car if he's to be at practice on time, and he'll be there. And all you've seen from Antonio Brown is practice footage, which lets you know, at least in this first week, they've got it right. And they've got a system that's worked for Josh Gordon, that's worked for other players who I won't mention. But they do things old school. If they got a guy they got money invested in and he has problems off the field, they're using their security team to make sure that he does what they want him to do.
With longtime NFLer Ryan Harris, so I want to play some audio here. Odell Beckham Jr. getting set for the game Monday night in New York. And Greg Williams is now part of the staff with the Jets. And Greg Williams was at the epicenter of Bounty Gate back in the day with New Orleans. He was effectively kicked out of the league, but eventually was brought back into the fold. Here's what Odell Beckham Jr. had to say about Greg Williams and playing against the Jets in the preseason.
Like in preseason, like nobody in the NFL is really out to do stuff like that. I had players on this team telling me that that's what he was telling them to do, take me out of the game in his preseason. So you just know who he is. Just the man. That's the man. Call him the players.
This is a sticky one for the NFL because of his history, Greg Williams. And Odell Beckham Jr., when he speaks, people are going to listen to him regardless of whether or not it's true or not. He's going on the record. He's saying that in preseason, Greg Williams was telling his guys to take him out. What kind of reaction would you expect from the NFL?
Well, I'll tell you something. People may listen, but nobody in the NFL is believing his ass. I mean, he is the classic locker room cancer. I mean, think about this. You have to win a football game if you're the Cleveland Browns. There's nothing else that matters. Not a $350,000 watch, not the preseason. Nothing matters right now. And you want to talk about a watch and people trying to come after you in a preseason game? He continues to show you why the Giants got rid of him. Everything he wants to talk about has nothing to do with winning the football game this weekend.
It's all about himself.
Those kind of guys are the worst teammates to be with. And that's with any sport, right? I mean, we all have kids and we've all played different sports. And when we go talk to a guy like, hey, man, you ready for this game? And they're like, well, I'll tell you something. Did you see the weather report for next Wednesday? You're like, dude, we play Sunday. What are you talking about? You know, that could get really old really quick.
But what about him saying that Greg Williams' own players were telling?
Hello?
Yeah, hello. You got us? You got us, Ryan? Oh, that's good. See if you can pick that up, Grappler, because he's on fire. This guy is outstanding.
Fantastic.
That's a great take on Odell Beckham Jr.
These are great hot takes.
These are outstanding takes. We got to see if we can get him back on the line. It's interesting he said no one's going to believe him because it's always all about Odell Beckham Jr., which is truthful in a lot of ways because it is always all about him.
You played in the OHL, but I'm pretty sure you played with some goons that were like just complete distractions. And if they blurt something out and it gets to the rest of the teammates, you're thinking, why is he doing that? Nobody believes him. It's a joke.
No doubt. But Greg Williams is different than any other defensive coordinator in football because he was the guy for Bounty Gate. He was the guy putting money on the head of Brett Favre and saying, go out and injure this guy and take him out and I'll pay you 10 grand or whatever it was. And he got kicked out of the league and eventually he was reinstated. But I think Beckham knows that. Beckham knows, to your point, this is about him getting attention. And if you say this about Greg Williams, he's going to get that much more attention because of the history of Greg Williams.
Yeah.
So as for the line itself, we should check that out. We should look at what the Browns are favored by now because Sam Darnold has mono. He won't be playing.
Well, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I got to get to the store. And
it's probably off the board, I would think. If you're in Vegas, you got to get that off the board because, like, the sharp money, they will be hammering the Browns. If you got in on Cleveland at -1.5, Trevor Siemian is playing quarterback, and Le'Veon Bell has a shoulder injury and may not be playing either. Like, the Jets are in big, big trouble.
You're just trying to talk it up into a
just a Cinderella story. I told you that Cleveland's winning.
Yeah, but are they going to cover the number? That's the big debate.
Yes.
We've got Ryan Harris, a longtime NFLer, back with us. What do you make of the Jets, how they're going to survive without Sam Darnold and maybe Le'Veon Bell not playing on Monday night?
Well, Trevor Siemian, now he's a pro bowler when he was with Denver, you know, didn't wow and shock anybody. But he's exactly what you want from a backup quarterback. Backup quarterbacks aren't set to set new records. They're there to help you win a game. And unfortunately, you know, it's going to be tough without Le'Veon Bell, because even when you see with Christian McCaffrey, a guy who played, you know, almost the most offensive snaps for the running backs last year, when you put a threat on the field, even if they're not getting the ball, the defense is paying attention to them. And without Le'Veon Bell, it's going to be tough for Trevor Siemian to find some throwing lanes.
You mentioned McCaffrey, and that game's going tonight. Carolina-Tampa, you can hear it right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN. Cam Newton's a guy, I'm not sure his toughness gets enough credit. Now, he puts himself in that spot, but, man, this guy's taken a beating throughout his career. And yet, because he's so big and because he's the one kind of going through the tackles as opposed to trying to run around him, I'm not sure he gets enough credit. What do you make of his career to this date, and whether or not he does get enough credit, or should he not be getting a ton of credit?
There's not a bigger conundrum in the NFL than Cam Newton. I mean, just think about the last game last week. Do we hear more about the fact that he threw for over 250 yards, or that he had a hat and a shirtless suit on?
You know what I'm saying?
Bandana too. Don't forget about the bandana.
Oh, well, you just see, there you go. I'm forgetting the things that are important, right?
Right.
You know, so it's like you just, and what's unusual is that usually that'll be one-sided. Either the media is making too much of something, or the players doing something, like Odell Beckham Jr.'s case. But it's unusual with Cam Newton, because on both sides this happened. He was asked, hey, you know, can you throw the ball downfield 20 yards? And what did he say? Oh, go ask their defensive coordinator if they won't cover past 20 yards. See how that works. It's kind of like he's bothered by the media for asking a question, and the media is bothered because he won't answer anything regarding his play. He is a talented he's a talented quarterback in the NFL, top 10 for sure. And the first time I ever saw him, I actually felt him first. The ground was shaking around me. I turned around, like, who the hell is this tight end? And it was Cam Newton just warming up. And an arm talent, and fortunately we beat him in Super Bowl 50, but he does not get enough credit. But much of that's to him, because he constantly brings up things that does not matter, and he has yet to understand the relationship between the media and being a franchise quarterback. It's part of the deal.
Who is a bigger man, Ben Roethlisberger or Cam Newton?
Man, that's a good one. They're different, you know. It's like Ben's definitely overall bigger, you know, more Canadian, you could say. I'm from Minnesota, so we know on the winter months we get a little thicker.
He's bulky, man. He's bulky.
But Cam Newton has an aura when you're standing next to him. I mean, he's tall, lengthy, muscular, and he just glides when he walks. So they're different types, but Ben is the overall Norseman bigger, but Cam Newton's just as big, man, in a lot of the different ways too.
What do you think Big Benny's summer routine is?
Yeah, he looked like he forgot training camp was around the corner.
Well, you know, I mean, what would you guys do in your seventh or your 12th year of making $10 million? How hard would you work?
I'd never work.
I'd work hard enough where my chin didn't look like that.
Well,
or I would try.
Well, he got rid of French fries this off season. That was his big sacrifice. So, I always like to remind people, when you start getting into these veterans like Ben Roethlisberger, who've been doing it 12, 13 years, starts to look a little different. You get to do what you want. Remember, he's the only quarterback to win the Super Bowl as a rookie, and he's been to 3 and 1-2. That's a tough guy to tell what to do in the NFL.
Oh yeah, big time. That's credibility. That's a resume. Well, this was great catching up with you. We'll have to do it again down the road. Thank you so much for this afternoon.
Thank you. Talk to you guys later.
There's Ryan Harris, 10-year NFL pro.
Get that guy on every week.
He was fantastic.
He is a grizzled veteran.
Well, I'm Minnesota.
Get him on
guy
every
too.
Week. I love that.
Like, I love that he's like Minnesota. I'm a Minnesota guy.
Yeah, we can say that because Roethlisberger's got that. He's bulky, man. He's got beef. Like, he is
fine though. If you can carry, like, there are people.
I bet you Big Ben is 280 all day.
Well, I looked it up while you were talking. They've got Newton listed at 6'5", 250. And he just said long and lean. That's 250 of muscle.
Right.
Ben would probably be 6, because Roethlisberger
Big
is 6'5",
2. 6'4", 280. Well, no question.
They have Roethlisberger at 6'5". So he's 6'5", 275, 280. But you know what?
Monster.
That being said,
a
Bailey's and coffee.
No fries. Cutting the fries out. He's chasing Brady's
Pebble
regiment.
Beach, Bailey's.
Love them.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get back into this because there's a lot more to get to.
Yeah, there is.
And my new favorite quarterback, Gardner Minshew, there's more details on his name. You're not going to believe this. It's so Southern.
Eddie Mio.
It's so Mississippi. the guy with the stash, the new starter down in Jacksonville. We'll tell you about that next. All right, Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, in about 15 minutes. The Thursday nighter tonight, Carolina, big favorite at home against Tampa. The Cleveland line, Cleveland, New York on Monday night because Sam Darnold is not playing. And Le'Veon Bell, we're not sure he's going to play, has been bet up to -6.5 for the Browns. So it opened, I think, at -1.5 Cleveland. It's now -6.5.
But so I can't take it at 1.5?
No, you got to wait until kickoff on Monday night. I think this line might be up to like 8.5, 9, 9.5.
So you're taking the Jets.
Well, I don't have a choice.
No, it's my game.
Yeah, it's his call.
Cleveland's winning.
By the way, you got to make a call tomorrow on our survivor pool.
I have to. I think so. I mean, you're the captain this week.
Take
We're both
Philly.
In on it, but you like Philly?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I like? You just got to pick a winner. Like New England going down to Miami.
New England is the lock of the
waste
century.
That one right away?
Here's where, listen, they are winning. There's no way they're not winning.
New England is the lock of the century.
You say that, but every lock has a key. Yeah. I just read this morning, since 2013, the Patriots are 1-5 in Miami.
It's like they go there and have the rookie party or something on Thursday
night. That's exactly what they do. And Brady was quoted today talking about Swass and how he tries to detect against it. Like, he plays with a towel down his pants.
Well, he doesn't want to look like he doesn't want to look like Chris Berman playing.
He's terrified about his image.
He doesn't play with a towel.
Read the piece. Grappler sent it to me. The Grappler's all over these type of details.
It's not a thick beach towel. It'll probably be
it's not a
liner.
It's not a Hudson's Bay massive colored towel.
Exactly.
But it's probably a little white one where he's just got to make sure because, I mean, if Giselle catches Swass, he may fly back to Boston and she's already packed her bags.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you don't want the Berman treatment on that.
This Gardner Minshew is my favorite new athlete. He's from Mississippi. He's from Flowood, Mississippi. I guess his official name is Gardner Minshew II. His dad's name is Flint.
Flint, Michigan?
His dad's name isn't Gardner.
So why is he the second?
Because his dad wanted it to be the second. He just decided, I'm making it the second because I want it to be the second. His grandfather wanted him to be named Beowulf, and I'm so disappointed he didn't win.
We got to take a look at this family tree and stuff. Like, this is
Beowulf Minshew by 1,000 this week, if that was his handle. We'll get into it in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.